Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock.
Happy 200s, guys. Just listening to your part B of 200 and enjoying it immensely. Gory fucking hole. Thanks. Bye.
Hey guys, this is David in Kentucky. I was just calling real quick to say, in response to the Charlie Hebdo situation, fuck the Prophet Muhammad. Fuck the Prophet Muhammad in a special hole drilled in his head 7 times a week and twice on Sunday. And I'm happy to let anyone know that. Glory, I'll keep up the good work. Later.
Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. This is episode 202 of Cognitive Dissonance. It's all downhill, Cecil. After the glorious high from our 200 A and B episode, and then kind of the denouement that was 201, at this point, we're just riding it. We're just fucking riding it. I'm not even going to pay attention until like 296. Until we start creeping back up, I just don't know what to look forward to anymore.
Well, maybe what we could do is like do something special every 25 just so you could keep, you know... keep a little spice in it. It's like dressing up, you know, in like that nurse outfit or something.
Right.
You know, we'll keep a little spice in the relationship.
Put a little something in there. So next time you come to Glory Hole Studios.
I'm wearing a suit of armor.
We'll have to think of something real special for you, Cecil.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it would have to be very fucking special. Like, if you could wear, like, three women, that's the only thing I can think
really,
of.
Really? It would, yeah. We'd need to have a spare, too. Like, not only, like, we didn't need, like, just two, you'd need a spare.
Well, I'm just thinking to
break
cover
one.
You. Like, it would take a lot of people to cover you, is all.
Admittedly.
You're all sick!
Oh, be nice!
Oh, my son doesn't stand a chance. The whole world's gone gay.
Oh, my God, what's happening now?
We work hard. We play hard.
So this episode is full of some crazy shit. The first one comes from alternet.org. What happened when I went undercover at a Christian gay to straight conversion camp? This sounds like the weirdest weekend ever. It sounds so weird. Like, this is one of those, forgive my voice, it's going out a little bit. I've been a little under the weather. This is one of those scenarios where you engage in a touch of like gonzo journalism, like you like immerse yourself in the subject. And I think when you get home on Sunday night, you just shudder and shake in the shower and rock yourself back and forth.
Right. Yeah. It's a really weird weekend. It's not like Weekend at Bernie's. It's like Weekend at Handy's, you know. I'll tell you, the stuff that they do in this, they basically, this guy goes undercover, goes to this gay conversion camp. Now, he's playing the part of a gay man, and he's actually a straight guy. And he goes to this thing. And I'll tell you, I have never read a story like this where people are trying to not be gay act really gay. Like, I mean, just like all the hugging is really weird and just really uncomfortable. It's just that they just have all this male on male contact. It feels like it's almost like they're just trying to reinforce you so you come back for the second session.
Yeah, you know you're in for an article when the first line is, I don't remember exactly when I felt his erection pressing into my back.
Oh, good Lord.
You know that you're in for a solid read, like a read that you simply cannot read on your phone at work if it's a corporate phone. That's why I was trying it. I was like, oh, no. Yeah. No, I do not need IT looking at this. This is and as I was reading this, I kept thinking, like, can you imagine if there was like a straight to gay camp, like all the fucking nuttertards on the right are always screaming about, right? Like the fucking they'll turn you gay camps. And like you went to like a camp full of like women and you had to like hug them and you were like super sexually repressed the whole time and you could never even think about your sexuality. And you were constantly like bumping up and rubbing up against a sex that you were attracted to. And then the whole time trying not to be attracted to them.
Right. Or having someone, who's you're clearly is in that age group, is in that sort of like, you know, is another person who you would be attracted to, right? A woman who you would see and be like, wow, I'm attracted to her. And you've got to hug her and cry on her shoulder and like hold her while you cry and try to make it seem like, you know, you don't have mommy issues or something.
Right.
Right. Some weird thing like that. That would be, and then she would have to say, sit in between your legs and lean back into you. And then like, you know, like all the different things that they made these guys do. And I can't help but think this is exactly what you don't want to do. I mean, if you think that staying away from sexual activity with a man is abhorrent, or if you think that sexual activity with a man is abhorrent, then why are you really just sort of getting to the very edge of it and then pushing yourself back? It just feels like it's like everything is just painful. Like this whole weekend that this guy describes seems like it would be the most painful thing for a gay person to go through.
Dude, and also I will say, regardless of the circumstances, the idea of spending a weekend with a bunch of fucking sobbing feeling strangers.
Yeah.
I would rather cut off my fucking eyelids. That sounds so horrible. I don't want to spend a weekend like that with my wife.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want
to know about her feelings.
I don't want to fucking, first of all, I don't need somebody else with their fucking head in my lap crying their fucking sad song.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And I'm never putting my head in your fucking lap and crying my sad song. Like, it's not. And to get together with a group of fucking strangers and being hugging each other and telling everybody that it's going to be all right. Oh, my God. That sounds horrible.
That's a different lifestyle than mine. I'm totally with you. I just think, you know, the idea that I'm going to stand in a room and you have my affirmations with these people and then weep and then sob and then beat my dad to death with an effigy at one point. They do that. He takes a baseball bat and beats a punching bag it's his father in effigy and he beats it to death. And that doesn't seem healthy from a psychiatric standpoint. I mean, you know, I'm no doctor and or psychiatrist, but that doesn't seem very healthy. The article itself is written very well. There's some funny parts that I just want to read them. I'm not even going to make a joke about it. I just think it's funny. At one point, he talks about how he was bullied as a young man. So like he has to give some sort of example. Right. He has to give some example of what he some sort of bad thing that went through in his childhood, because they're immediately trying to say, one, that you have daddy issues. These people that are trying to cure you are trying to say that you have daddy issues or that you had some sort of problem in your childhood. And that's what made you gay. That's the thing that turns you gay. There's nothing inside of you that is gay. It's these experiences. And I guess if they can hug it out enough, then it goes away. But at one point, he's talking about how they have to recreate some of these things in his childhood. And And so he was being held on the ground. So one of the things they did was, he said, he and the other men in the room kneel around me, their legs pinning me in the blanket so that I am wrapped so tight like a taquito and only my head popped out the opening. So basically he had to wriggle his way out of that like a fucking caterpillar getting ready to turn into a butterfly. I guess it's like a caterpillar turning into a less gay butterfly, but I don't really know. And then there's like a part where they're screaming, finish him. Like, what is this, Mortal Kombat?
I know, right?
What is happening? And finish him in a gay sense has a totally different ring than a sort of a Mortal Kombat sense.
Yeah, but it's polite, you know? at least they take the edge off.
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe you could rephrase it to like reach around him, I guess.
You know, this reminds me, Cecil, of when my wife was pregnant with our first child, we went to a couple of different birthing classes, right? The second one that we went to one that was very educational and informative. Here's what's going to happen. You know, here's what it's going to look like, blah, blah, blah. Here's what you do. Very educational, very informative, very useful. The second one was based on this book that I had read, my wife had read. She suggested I read it. I did it. And we went to this class, and it was one of those fucking experiences where you leave halfway through because it sucks so bad and you don't even care that you're being impolite when you're doing it. Which is exactly what we did.
Did you really?
I just told Colleen, I'm like, I simply can't do this. Like, we have to go. I can't play along. It was one of those things where everybody's breathless the whole time.
Yeah.
Super breathless. Because I'm like, I'm looking at this thing and it's like, you know, finally he takes in a deep breath and asks, what is a man? And I'm just thinking like, I would just fucking leave.
Yeah.
I would just be like, nope, peace. I'm out. I'm not doing this. I'm not having, like, I'll be honest, like, I would have that conversation in a meaningful way, but I will not have that conversation in a fucking hokey bullshit, emotionally fraught nonsense way around a group of fucking strangers playing out their fucking made up psychodramas. That is such a fucking horseshit, lame ass, like it's just emotional overload for nothing. Like, you get nothing out of it at all.
And I mean, let's you know, before people, you know, get mad at us because we're just making fun of this thing, this is a harmful thing. This isn't a useful thing. This has been proven to be and shown many, many times over and over again that anti-gay therapy is not useful. There's no use in what they're doing. And they're being violent and they're pointing at things that aren't the actual cause and they're making shit up as they go along. There's a lot of harm that's done here. This isn't just a harmless little, you know, you waste your money and you paid some jerk. This is possible, like you say, trauma to the psyche.
Well, and like these guys are just, I mean, because there's no evidence that it works, right? It means that they're just making it up. They're not using an evidence-based approach because they don't have evidence to get you from point A to point B. So without evidence, they're just making all this up. So you show up at this fucking retreat or conference center or whatever it is, and you fucking get some dude's erection pressed into your back while you answer nonsense questions about what is a man, while some other dude is beating his dad in effigy. And all you get out of it is a really weird weekend. Like, that's the best case scenario.
That guy on the other side of the glory hole, it's Jesus.
So this story comes from the Religion News Service. Does Catholicism have a man crisis? Or is Cardinal Burke paranoid? Cardinal Raymond Burke said that the radical feminism, which has assaulted the church and society since the 1960s, has left men very marginalized. Well, that's very confusing. Because the church is run exclusively by men. How are you marginalized? Like, the Catholic Church, the men in the Catholic Church are marginalized. You hold literally every position of power and authority.
Yeah.
There are no positions of power and authority that you have 100% of them.
This is, isn't it crazy? It's just one of those, we want to make sure we take away the underdog status from the underdog, so we're going to be the underdog now, and we're so powerful we can decide that we're the underdog,
right?
I guess I don't even know.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, as a coming back to that last story, like, what is a man, you know, like,
Yeah.
I don't feel fucking marginalized at all. Like, there's never a point in my life where I'm like, ah, today would totally have been better if I were a woman.
Yeah.
It's never happened in all the history of ever.
Yeah. There's a great part of this because he's talking about this person. It's an editorial, so it's written in a sort of scathing way. So I'm going to read a little piece of it. It says, in spite of Burke's paranoid opinion that rampant liturgical experimentation resulted in men who were really turned off by the mass, women will stand and recite a recently revised Nicene Creed that states that Christ died for us men, then will pray to a God referred to only by male pronouns, even as God gender remains stubbornly mysterious. Even the language of the liturgy negates the presence of women. And I, you know, the thing is I understand where she's coming from, but at the same time, she's just got to turn to her Bible. I think it's Mark chapter 17, verse 3, where Jesus, it's right here. It says, and Jesus saith, bros before hoes. That's right. It's verse 3. So all you got to do is look it up.
Yeah, it's good to have that that background that you've got in the biblical scholarship. I really appreciate you bringing that to the table. You know, I was surprised that Burke was bewildered by, quote, women's constant and insistent demanding of rights.
Yeah. It's a constant.
Man, just, these women, gosh, with their needing rights.
Oh, she's just nagging me night and day for her rights. Good Lord.
Yeah, people want rights. That's shocking. And then he talks, then he goes on arguing, talking about feminized priests. So now he's basically saying it's not enough. It's not enough to say that, like, women want rights and that's bad. And then so... But now if it's not women, now it's feminine dudes. Now it's guys who aren't, like, fucking masculine enough. Like, how masculine do you need to be a priest?
Well, he says they're men, according to Burke, have particular gifts and make sacrifices and demand and defend their families with chivalry. They are heroic and should demonstrate a manly identity and manly virtues. And you look at this guy and he's like a hunched over 70-year-old dude. And you're just like, dude, I can't learn how to be manly from you. There's nothing manly about you. You're like an old man.
Yeah.
The only thing is, like, old manly. I guess you could teach me how to be an old manly, but that's about it.
Yeah, I do like there's a line in here that strikes home to what you were saying. It says, it is ironic that a man who wears silk and lace chooses to lecture men on what it means to be masculine. And I just find that very amusing. Not that wearing, like, there's nothing about, like, your fucking physical trappings that is what makes a man, or, like, what makes somebody masculine or feminine. It's just a ridiculous idea. The idea, too, that, like, that the Catholic Church wants to be the underdog, right? Like we talked about before, like, if they can't have it legitimately, they'll just fucking make it up. Yeah, we're the underdog. Us men in the Catholic Church, totes underdogs.
This article has a link to Cardinal Burke, and it's got pictures of him and Liberace right next to each other, and it's fucking outrageously hilarious. Like, it's so funny. There's this huge, he's wearing this huge cape. He's got this lace gown on. I mean, it's the only thing you call it is a gown. And it looks, I mean, it looks so ridiculous. He looks like when you're going to take your child to the first baptism. Like, he looks like a giant baby in the thing. It is the most ridiculous looking thing. And it looks like a lace little apron. It looks like something you would buy at Taboo Taboo.
Have you always wanted to win the lottery? Do you suffer from chronic poverty syndrome? Do you have real problems that are too much work to actually work on? Would you rather pretend to help than actually help? Prayer might be right for you.
So this little spot of good news in the world comes from... standardmedia.co.ke. Yeah. That's somewhere. Six die at Prophet David Awuru's Nakuru Crusade.
Man, jeez.
There was no way to pronounce that properly.
I feel like I'm talking to a native speaker right now.
So there's a prophet, David Awuru. how am I going to pronounce that? Awuru. Awuru.
You sound like someone who has just learned use of their mouth. Where you're just like, Awuru. Awuru.
All right, let me try
either
it for real.
It's either that, or you sound like Rocky after he's been punched in the head a bunch of times. He's like, Awuru.
Andrew.
All right, I'm going to give it a whirl here.
Here we go.
It's Prophet David Auer. Auer. How would you pronounce that? You give it a whirl.
I don't know. It's Auer.
So Prophet David had a crusade somewhere in the world. Not
a crusade? Wait, a crusade?
Yeah, a crusade. It's a grand crusade, though. It's not one of those piddle fuck crusades that fucking anybody can do. This was a grand crusade.
What was grand about it?
Well, here's what was grand about it. Six fucking people died at the crusade. But, you know, to be fair, they died of natural causes.
Natural causes.
They were brought to the crusade to receive healing miracles.
Right.
But instead they received nothing.
Okay.
And they fucking died.
Well, at least it wasn't crusade-induced death.
Right.
That's, you know, okay, I get it.
It
would
have been much more useful if they had been brought to, like, the Mayo Clinic, for example.
Yeah, right.
You know, where you can actually get treatment. And the reason we want to talk about this is this fucking guy has these healing shenanigans, and people show up, and these are the kinds of things where people show up and then they postpone actual treatment.
Yeah,
so they funnel their time and their resources to getting to these crusades, you know, traveling to them, staying at them, spending money, spending time, spending energy that may be valuably kept to fight whatever ailment they have that fucking, and then they fucking die anyway. Because it turns out a motherfucker can't cure you like this.
Yeah. You just show up to a place like this, and like you say, you've wasted your time here. And tell me he's going to get to you. You look at this picture, there is a field full of what, you know, what could be a quarter of a million people. I mean,
so
just
many
look
people.
At this. It's just, I mean, even if it's like 60,000, let's just say it's 10,000. Is he going to have enough time for individual care with everybody and, you know, lay hands on you? And what do you get at the very end of it if you die? Do you get like a t-shirt that says I went to this grand crusade and all I got was dead?
Dead? It's like your Sunday worst. That's what they're putting you
Sunday
in is your
worst.
Sunday worst.
I like that.
And like we want to be really clear, right? Because Cecil and I are not blaming the people who are desperately looking for anything to help treat them, right? Like if I were fucking sick and desperate, who knows? You know, I mean, and some dude's like, I got a cure for that. Nobody else has a cure for that. Maybe I'd be interested in the cure for that. The problem isn't the people who show up and desperately want to be cured from being ill. That's fucking human and understandable. The problem is the motherfucking vampires who sell these fucking bullshit cures that they know are bullshit. So, like, make no mistake. This guy knows it's bullshit. He's a money-hungry vampire. And that's all it is.
And the thing is it's crazy. These guys don't work together. At the bottom of the article, they're talking about how he condemns other local preachers who spend their lifetime, and I'm quoting directly from the article here, pushing believers for miracles in the name of making money, saying such days are long gone and God will punish them for cheating and misleading his people. And you're like, wait a minute. You're doing the same thing. You're just doing it in a different name.
Right.
That's all he's doing. He's just making it look like he's legitimate by chasing out people who are con men when he's doing the same con.
And isn't that like a great tool of the con man, right? Like you point out, I mean, you could even do that to a shill in the audience, you know? You have a shill, you point out how they're not legit, and now all of a sudden you're the good guy, right? Like I've saved. Look at what I did. I'm not like that. I'm legitimate. I found the pretenders. You know, I'm looking out for your best interest. And all that does is it increases your brand, right? It increases the people's buy-in to your bullshit. But at the end of the day, it's fucking bullshit. It's just nonsense. And like proof is in the fucking dead people.
Lord, we just ask to be covered with the blood of Jesus. Open hearts, Lord. Open hearts.
So this little delightful turd comes from the Raw story. Pastor, I punched a kid, quote, as hard as I could. That's the best part of the whole thing for not taking the Lord serious.
Right.
And Cecil, look at this guy miming. In the first photo, punching kid as hard as he could. I like that he punched him with 100% of the possible force he could muster.
Because as hard as he could, right?
When you are beating children, it is important to never pull your punches, right? So that's how I discipline the baby that we have. Like we have a baby, and it's important that you discipline infants. And so I just kick him just as hard as I can. Boom. We get some real air on him.
Sure. Yeah. And it toughens the kid up.
Right.
I mean, come on. This is how you toughen the kid up.
Otherwise, they'll never learn. They'll fucking take advantage of you.
Never learn. And this guy, after he was done punching the kid, I think he said, "I'm strong to the finish because I eats me spinach." And then afterwards, he was like, "Ah, go. All right, so we've got to play this. This is a clip from this guy. It's from his church. So he's speaking at his church, and his name is Pastor
Damn the man.
There was a young man in Calvary. His name was Ben. And I was running a youth group. I was there for a few years. And he was a nice kid, but he was one of those kids that was always just, he's a real smart aleck. Was a bright kid, which didn't help things, right? Made him more dangerous.
Wait, why would bright make him more dangerous?
Because he can see through your bullshit, you dumb
shit. Because he's not listening to your dumb shit, is that
right?
It?
God, to say that out loud, to admit out loud.
I know.
That, like,
I know.
A kid being a bright kid is dangerous to your fucking message. Like, whoa, you know, if people start thinking about this, they're going to realize it's all made up.
And we were outside one day, youth group, and he was just trying to push my buttons, and he was just, you know, kind of not taking the Lord serious. And I walked over to him, and I went, bam! I punched him in the chest as hard as I crumpled the kid. I just crumpled him. And I leaned over and I said, "Ben, when are you going to stop playing games with God?" I led that man to the Lord right there. There's times that that might be needed.
You led him to the Lord when you punched him in the chest.
I love that he gloats. Like, yeah. I beat a kid. As a grown fucking man, I walked over to a kid who was a nice kid and a smart kid, and I crumpled him. Oh, man. When I beat kids, I'll tell you what, when I beat kids, they stay beat. That's how I beat my kids. You should see how I treat my wife. I love Jesus.
I love that he crumpled him. The kid's not a Toyota. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck?
I hit that kid so hard his fucking airbags went off.
Yeah. Fucking his side airbag exploded. What's the message here? I mean, really, I can't even parse this out when I think about it. If I was sitting in the audience, what's the message? The message is, it's okay to hurt another human being as long as you lead them to Jesus afterwards? Or as long as that pain sort of forces them to respect Jesus, I guess? I don't really even know what the fucking message is.
Yeah, it's conversion through violence, right? I mean, it is conversion through violence. Like, you will, and then he says, like, I think the message they're trying to take away is that there are times when you have to be serious about spreading the good word by punching children until they crumble. It's the good word. It's not just a good word. If some smart kid tries to tell you it's a good word, you tell him it's the fucking best word, and then you wallop him in the fucking head.
Right. It's exactly it. Yeah. And if you're trying to teach a kid about Buddha, you just got to shake it. You got to. If it's a baby, you got to shake the shit out of it. I mean, you just got to shake it and shake it and shake it until it understands that Buddha is the way. I think that's what you have to do.
What I've done, Cecil, is I've filled a potato gun full of Bibles. And whenever I see somebody who doesn't appear to be taking the Lord seriously, I shoot them point blank in the face with a Bible at about, you know, 100 feet per second.
Oh, that's nice.
And so when they're recovering from the traumatic brain injury, then, you know, first of all, they're not as smart, so it renders them less dangerous. And then they know that God loves them. That's how you know. A loving God wants you to be hit in the face very hard.
And that'll wake up. I think that wakes you up. I mean, it wakes you up very briefly before it knocks you out, but it wakes you up.
Well, one of your other options is to get, like, those knuckle rings that just say, like, Lord across, and they just pound the shit out of somebody.
Like, yeah, sure.
Have you met the Lord? What? Boom. And then, you know, then they know. They know to take it fucking serious.
You could also put a cock ring on him and smack his balls.
That's another option.
But that's sort of like the Catholic way. I mean, like, that's sort of
that only works for little kids.
Yeah. Oh no.
Wakefield is not just any researcher. His 1998 study on autism and childhood vaccines literally changed the way many parents think about vaccines. The study was based on just 12 children. That's right, 12 children But many parents, desperate for answers around the world, embraced Wakefield's claim that he'd found a link between autism and the vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella.
So this story is actually a BuzzFeed news story. Number of measles cases linked to Disneyland rises to 26, health officials say. So Disneyland, it's a world of wonder. It's a world of joy. It's a world of pus-filled pestilence, as it turns out. But, you know, only if you decide not to get your fucking kids vaccinated. 26 cases, yeah. Cecil. Measles is incredibly – it's airborne, and it is the most highly contagious disease.
Crazy.
It's insanely contagious.
It's crazy.
Exposure – you know, I was reading something like it's 90 to 95% of people exposed to measles will get measles. That is an incredible level of virulence that disease has. And it's fucking airborne. What we should do is come up with some way, some proactive strategy.
What could we do, Tom? I don't even know. I mean, like, I think we need somebody smarter than us to figure out some way to combat this.
Gotta be.
They said that the age range of the people who were infected, one of them was like 8 months. And then they worked their way all up to like 21 years old or something like that, I thought it said in the article. I can't find it here now. But it did say that some were partially vaccinated and at least two were too young to be vaccinated. Yep. So how shitty would that be that you haven't even had a fucking opportunity to get your fucking MMR or whatever it is that it is the shot that you would need, but you still get the fucking measles because some jagoff takes, you know, doesn't vaccinate his kids or, you know, winds up because it spreads through there like wildfire.
Yep.
Because if, you know, you have people who don't vaccinate, they're at risk. And then you have the people who show up that have the disease that are from another country. They said that they traced it from somebody else from like another country or something. And you're just like, well, fuck. You didn't even do anything. We're going to follow the rules and get vaccinated and all that. Now you're fucked. Now you got fucking measles. And it's not a fucking harmless disease.
It's not, especially for fucking infants, right? I got to tell you, man, I would be fucking mad as hell if my infant got fucking measles because some dipshit decided not to get fucking immunized. I would be so fucking furious if I had to deal with like, oh, now I have... fucking my infant has the goddamn measles because somebody else's irresponsible bad actions led to that. You know, we've got there's just people like grown ass fucking people who are immune compromised who can't get fucking vaccines and they got to walk around and live in the world. And this idea that like, well, you know, in the United States, we've mostly eradicated these diseases. So we don't need to. And I've heard this, you know, we don't need to get these vaccines anymore. Like, the United States is not a goddamn bubble. Like, we live in a global society. And if you want evidence of that, just look at this. Just look at this case. Like, you stayed in the U.S. You didn't leave. But you know what? People fucking come here. And they leave here and go places and come back. It's a fucking global world. It's motherfucking 2015. We've got aeroplanes.
Yeah, and you know, you could argue, since this was at Disneyland, it's actually a small world after all.
It's proof, right?
Seriously, though, that's a shitty thing to put an infant through. You might even have to hospitalize your infant. The infant, people have died from the measles. It's not like that's unheard of. You can die from the measles. It's an extremely high fever. It's, you know, being super sick and having fucking nasty fucking sores and shit. I mean, they're not sores, but you know what I mean? Like fucking bumps and shit all over your body. It's not a fucking pleasant thing to do. It's not like, oh, it's fucking Saturday afternoon. What do I want to do? Oh, I want to get the measles today. That sounds like it'd be a good time. That's not like, it's not like eating a fucking ice cream bar. It's not happy go fun time. It's a shitty time. And the parents who say, I want to make sure that my kids just deal with it and they'll be stronger if they do it. These are all the same people who like shelter their kids and homeschool their kids.
Right.
And
it's like, fucking crazy. People,
it's like all that's like such a backwards way to look at it. Like, wouldn't you want to protect your child from this? Don't you want your child to suffer less? Isn't that an important thing to you? But instead it's just, fuck it. We don't need it. We don't need this fucking vaccine. And then you go to a place that is a tourist destination for the entire world and you get fucking measles.
And like, I got to tell you, like, if there was a vaccine that made my kid never get sick at all for anything, I would get him that, you know, like, regardless of like how dangerous or not dangerous you think measles is, like, who wants to get sick? being sick always sucks. Even like,
yeah.
If there was a fucking vaccine there, I didn't get the fucking common cold anymore, which is right. No more than a fucking mild inconvenience for most. I'd be like, yeah, I'll take that fucking vaccine because I think being sick sucks. Like, right. If you ever say, like, would you rather be healthy or sick? I'd be like, well, I will always rather be healthy. There's never a time where I'm like, oh, man, gosh, I really wish I was fucking actually sick. That would be way better.
And isn't, like, the people who would say, I would like to be sick, they're, like, people that are, like, psychiatrically, like, compromised. Like, aren't they a little crazy? Isn't that, like, a phobia or something? Like, a hypochondriac right. thing or something?
Yeah, I mean, I cannot imagine a world where somebody actually says, man, being sick is way better than being healthy. Like,
sure, if they were normal, right. like if they're abnormal, maybe they'll say yeah. that. But then I think you already have to agree that they're already sick.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's like, well, fucking mission accomplished. So,
yeah.
But it's also like I'm reminded. Remember a long time ago we covered that story where people were mailing off the lollipops,
yeah.
the fucking chicken pox infested lollipops, because there's this bizarre notion that if you get the disease quote naturally. That it's better, like, but at the end of the day, it's such a misunderstanding of vaccination because at the end of the day, you're left with the same thing, which is antibodies against getting the fucking disease. It's just that yeah. in one scenario, you didn't actually have to get the disease.
Yeah, but you could also, like, don't you also, if you get chicken pox, like, naturally, can't you, aren't you, like, gonna get shingles or possibly get shingles?
Yeah, so you gotta
on.
I mean, like, I got it, right? So, like, we're gonna yeah. have to get fucking shingles vaccines because if you there's a possibility of recontracting or whatever. I'm not really 100% sure how the yeah. shingles thing works.
I'm not really that interested. I kind of am looking forward to the shingles. I'm looking forward to shingles.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's, I actually hear I'm it's look, super yeah. painful.
I know, I hear it's like the worst shit ever.
I don't want that. But you know what? I'll get the goddamn shingles vaccine. This story comes from The Guardian. Saudi cleric issues fatwa on snowmen. A prominent Saudi Arabian cleric tried to be surprised. There's probably no more than 200,000 or 300,000 of them. has issued a religious edict forbidding the building of snowmen. And my first thought was like, "You're in Saudi Arabia. What are the fucking chances that any fucking right. that this is like a local issue you really need to deal right. with?"
Yeah. This is awesome. There's some parts where he says they posted a photo of a man in formal Arab garb holding the arm of a snow bride, and the snow bride is in quotes, wearing a bra and lipstick. The reason for the ban itself is sedition. He says this person's supporters said that building a snowman is imitating the infidels. It promotes lustiness and eroticism. And I'm thinking, you know, they just don't understand what blue balls are.
Yeah, maybe they think they're really cold balls.
They're just really, really cold balls of snow. No, that's very different, I think. And wait, there's lustiness. Like, there's no, like, the snowman shape itself, the three balls, right? One large one, one sort of middle one, and one for the head. Like, if that can turn you on. Man, you have a vivid imagination.
Well, to be fair, I would totally fuck a snowman. I just think that's hot, dude. I mean,
it's
never
not.
Mind
it's,
the
it's
fact
cold,
that my dick
actually.
Would fucking freeze and fall off in the process.
Right, right.
And can you imagine the chafing? Like, fucking snow right. is all, like, rough and angry. Like, it would be... I mean, the shittiest experience ever.
It would also be the worst snow cone flavor possible, by the way. That's not one you get twice.
Oh,
you only order that once. Yeah,
you got to eat a lot of pineapple ahead of that to make that. I'm not sure that would work.
Hot sauce. You got to get hot sauce. Yeah. If you eat the hot sauce, then it's...
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, they do say wash with cold water. So, I mean, it's the coldest water.
It's really the coldest you can get water,
that's
it
turns
out.
That's it.
Yeah.
I do like that one of the supporters said, "May God preserve the scholars, for they enjoy sharp vision." And I love this. "Recognize matters that even Satan does not think about." And you have to wonder, like, I don't think that was really a supporter. Like, that strikes me as saying, like, hey, look, of all the shit, of all the fucking evil shit in the world for you to be concerned about right now. You're like, well, I don't know if it's fucking Islamically acceptable to build snow roughly in the shape of a lumpy human. Every snowman looks like me. Like every snowman, yeah. I'm like, yeah, that could pass for me.
That's why I was saying it's the least attractive thing in right. the world.
It, like, yeah, yes, it is basically me. So
yeah. yeah. It's very round on the bottom and a little less round on the top.
Podcasters. They live in squalor, destitute, and disenfranchised, eking out an existence as best they can in such desolate places as Chicago. In pairs, but otherwise alone, they suffer from hunger and thirst, barely making it day to day on store-brand chicken wings and weak domestic beer. In the arms of the angel, fly away from here, from this dark, cold hotel room, and the endlessness that you fear. But now you can help. For just a few dollars a podcast, pennies a day, you can give them the restaurant-style chicken wings and imported beer that they so desperately need. For less than the price of a cup of coffee, you can make a difference in their lives, allowing them the opportunity to rant unfettered, as nature intended. Please, go to patreon.com/distancepod today, make a pledge, and help these poor, innocent creatures lead a life worth living.
So this story comes from Mediaite, ultra-Orthodox Jewish newspaper, edits female world leaders out of Charlie Hebdo march. So the march across Paris that included 40 world leaders that was for solidarity after the massacre obviously contained world leaders, and world leaders sometimes are women. Unless you're Jewish, I guess, in which case
right.
they edit them out. Like they fucking yeah, photoshopped man. Out the women's.
Yeah. When I first saw this picture, I thought, oh, did they just crop it? And they cropped out like this woman on the side and this other woman on the side, and they just cropped them out. That's what I thought. I was like, ah, they probably just cropped it. And then I started looking. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like Germany's fucking leader, like the prime yeah. minister of Germany or whatever, is right in the front. And she's completely
gone, dude. She's just not
gone.
There.
Like she gets fucking completely just removed right out of it. And it's funny because when you look at the two different images, it's like when you used to do those little things when you were a kid where it's like spot the differences.
Yeah, right.
And you've got to work your way through. There's a part on the side where there's a woman, a shorter woman, who's holding two guys' arms. So there's the two guys' arms. And she's got her little gloves in their arms. And at one point, they show this guy standing next to this other guy. And they photoshopped his arm away from his front and made it look like he has a tiny little short arm that's holding on to the woman. It looks so ridiculous. All of these look so silly. And like they completely removed that woman totally from the drawing. They completely just cut and moved the whole piece over. They didn't even care. They just wantonly went in and just destroyed the whole image to take women out of there. So like that you just forget that women exist or that women can be leaders.
Yeah, like I don't even know what this accomplishes. Like do you think that now all of a sudden like Angela Merkel's not like in charge in Germany because you took it off the front page of your newspaper? You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, the Chancellor of Germany doesn't change because you decided not to show it.
Right.
This is one of those things where you see it. It's like, this is just so fucking odd. I can understand that you might have a worldview where you don't think it's appropriate for women to be in positions of power and authority. I think you're fucking goofy for it, but I can understand that worldview exists. What I can't understand is trying to like manipulate reality so that it fits your worldview. Like, look around. Like, that's like saying, like, there's no dogs in the world. I mean, seriously, it's just like that. It's like saying, like, there's no, it's like if the Amish not only didn't use cars, but refused to accept that there were cars.
And what would be really weird is if the Amish used Photoshop. That would be really weird, I think. I'm surprised this thing isn't carved into a stone tablet.
Right? I mean, if you've got, like, you've got a Stone Age worldview.
Might as
so,
well.
So, like, using 20th century or 21st century technology to, like, try to continue a Bronze Age worldview is fucking weird. It's super fucking weird. And it's, I like, does anybody really think it's effective? Or is it just that, like, the sight of women is so offensive that it's like editing out, you know, like taking out the fucking bacon ads when you sell, you know, Muslim newspapers? Like, oh, well.
I wonder about that. I wonder if they wouldn't have sold any if they were to keep those women on the cover. I wonder if they would have said, oh, well, we can't sell this because nobody will buy it. All our, like, weird people who are our customers will just pass it over and say, oh, well, there's a woman on the cover, I can't actually buy it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. And like, what else is weird about it is like Mahmoud Abbas is on there, the Palestinian president. And like, I would think that if you're an ultra Orthodox Jew and you're and you've got issues
right.
You've got issues with a certain world leader,
right?
Maybe it's time to revise. I'm just saying, maybe a revision of priorities is in order.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
So this story comes from Right Wing Watch. Rick Wiles, gays and secular Jews and Obama Jews. That's right, Obama. Wait, Jews.
Obama Jews?
They're actually delicious. That sounds, they're very chewy.
Yeah. I actually, the first thing I thought is, like, that's when you go to Jamba Juice and you ask for an Obama Juice.
Yeah, would you like a cherry Obama Juice? Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty tasty. They'll destroy America, Cecil. I didn't even read the whole thing. Yeah. God damn me.
Right.
Rick Wiles, gays, secular Jews, and Obama Juice will destroy America with their evil communist plans to foment a race war.
All right, let's just play Rick Wiles. This is Rick Wiles from his Crazy Rick Wiles Show, the End Time Show, True News Show. Sorry. We're going to play the first clip.
Let me ask you this question. Why is it so difficult for most people in America to realize that Barack Obama is a jihadist and that he has formally, officially switched sides in U.S. foreign policy?
Well, because none of the actions actually match that behavior at all.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's very hard for people to understand.
That is super problematic about trying to understand.
Also, he's still fucking drone striking Muslims. So, and they killed like 50 of them in Syria with airstrikes. So, yeah, I think they're still kind of wholesaling killing people all around the world. And he's not really a Muslim.
The U.S. now officially supports the Muslim terrorists and opposes Israel. It's not that difficult to see what's happening. Here in the USA, Barry Satoru, alias Barack Obama.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I was looking that up earlier. So I guess as a child in Indonesia, Obama, I'm reading from the wiki, Obama was called Barry. Sometimes Barry Satoru, reflecting his stepfather's surname. So it's just a name that he went by as a kid. How it's possibly relevant, I cannot possibly. I don't.
What a weird thing to say.
Yeah, why would you like? Here you've got a guy with an unusual name that the sound of the name would almost serve to bolster your crazy
right.
claim. And you're going to go out of your way to choose a more comfortably Americanized name. That'd be like saying, like, you know, Abu Sharif Mohammed, a.k.a. Bill Smith.
Gosh.
Continues to lead his Marxist revolution to overthrow American society and its government.
Why would he overthrow the government that he's running?
I was going to say, like, how do you overthrow your own government when you are the government?
Right. What's
that? Doesn't like it's just like it's like turning your blanket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm so mad, I'm going to sleep with my blanket upside down. Like, okay, that did nothing. Like, that actually did nothing at all. I don't understand
it. I don't know how you actually do it. I don't know how you overthrow yourself and then still keep the same position.
Where lies the advantage? Right. Like, ha, now I'm out of power. Damn it. Right? Like, I don't know.
You would think he'd try to.
It'd be like rising to a position of authority in your company just so you could fire yourself.
Just so you could make the company go out of business. I don't understand. I just don't get it.
Now that I have stock options, I'm going to tank our stock price.
We have Marxist communists marching in the streets of U.S. cities, chanting, "What do we want? Dead cops now!" And what happens? Cops sitting in their cruiser get shot in the head. Is it any surprise that this is happening? I warned the American people in 2008 that Barack Obama is a dangerous Marxist communist revolutionary who will start race riots and another civil war and set America on fire.
He's not only a Marxist, but he's an arsonist, too. That's awesome, man. Oh, gosh. So, you know, some presidents just like to watch the world burn. So,
President Barack Nero Obama.
No, it's Barack Barry Nero Sotero Obama, I think you got to say.
He's getting away with his radical revolutionary agenda because people can't believe it's actually happening. It's so surreal that people can't bring themselves to admitting that a Marxist communist revolution is actually underway in the United States of America.
That is just amazing.
The reason we can't believe that the Marxist, socialist, evil, revolutionary race war is happening is because, you know, it's not happening. So that's really like the hard part about trying to wrap your head around it. Like, have we had a few issues of significant racial tension? Sure. But like, would we blame them on the president if there was some white dude in office? No. Like, that's not how that would work. Like, so this confirms the worst fears of the racist right-wing ideologues, right? That like a black president will lead to a race war, but there's no race war. It's not a race war is not like a bunch of people primarily protesting peacefully and chanting and like a vigorous national dialogue. That is not a race war. If that's a race war, it's like the most tepid fucking race war possible.
Well, and I think that just shows how fucking tightly clenched these guys' assholes are when it comes to somebody else, right? When it comes to the other, whatever the other is, these guys just flip the shit. Because if all these people go out in the street and demonstrate, that to them is a race war. They think that's a race war because the status quo is being questioned, because people are being people aren't willing to take the abuse that they've received in the past, and whether or not, you know, that abuse, you know, I've been in a lot of discussions about whether or not that abuse is real. And I think that there's a lot of cases of police abuse. You know, you don't want to say that all policemen are bad people,
No. But
you clearly want to say like there are some serious problems that are happening with some police officers, and they constantly get covered up because police officers protect other police officers. So you have some real fucking serious problems when it comes to the police. You know, I respect the police, and I think that it's, you know, that they do a tough job. But at the same time, I think that they got to do their job right, and they got to do their job in a way that that should be looked at, that should be able to be scrutinized from the outside and not have any questions behind what their actions, what they did. There's a lot of times that the police officers do some bad shit, and then they kind of look at you and be like, well, I do a really hard job. You're like, well, fucking so what? Like, just because I do a hard job, like, let's say fucking, you know, running a pipeline is a hard job. If I happen to spill a bunch of crude across America, it's still my fucking fault, you know? You can't just throw your hands in the air just because your job is tough and say, oh, well, I do a hard job, so you should forgive all my fucking transgressions. No, you don't get forgiven your transgressions. In fact, we hold you to a higher standard because you do a tough job.
Well, and not just a tough job, but like, it's a job where you're given tremendous power, like physical power, over the safety and well-being of other people. They walk around with fucking guns on their hips. literal guns on their motherfucking hips. So if you're going to have people who are, you know, patrolling your society in an armed way, I mean, you have to have oversight. And I think that if nothing else, these conversations that we've had, you know, do lead us back to conversations about how we oversee the police, what responsible police oversight looks like, you know, who should be doing that work, how we measure the work that they're doing. Because what we have now is a system of, well, the police said it's cool, and then we checked with the other police who police the police, and they said it was cool, so it must be cool. And that's not really good enough.
So we want to thank our latest patrons. We want to thank Adrienne, Jack, Wally, Jerry, Rob, Rasmus, Brandon, Sean, and Liam. Thank you all so much. Your generous donations go a long way to making sure the podcast happens. We just had a groundswell of support recently, and we just absolutely thrilled that people are donating to the show. We also want to remind people that if you can't, you know, give any money, we really do appreciate ratings, especially on iTunes. Recently got a negative review. We'd like to push that negative review down on iTunes. So if you happen to like the show and you haven't rated us yet, we'd love to get a rating from you on iTunes. We love to get to read the reviews, and we always get a thrill out of it. So if you like the show and you enjoy the show, we encourage you to rate us. If you don't like the show, we have no idea why you listen. And we encourage you not to rate us. So,
and you can also, another useful place to rate us would be on Stitcher as well. That would be, although it's a pain in the ass to do, I'm not going to lie to you, but if you get around to that, we'd greatly appreciate that as well.
I think you have to just go to the site. It's a lot easier if you just go to the site.
Right.
It's not easy on your phone. I think it's funny. Like, I think you wind up rating the Stitcher app if you try to rate. It's this weird
system
that they have set up. But if you go to, I know that you can rate us on Stitcher if you go to the website and you find us on there. We got a message from Paul, and Paul says, I'm a regular listener to Cognitive Dissonance. I want to congratulate you on your excellent podcasts. I think he sent the email to the wrong person. It says, I have a suggestion for an interview. Someone who has a strong interest in parapsychology but considers himself a skeptic. I'd like to hear a debate with knowledgeable proponents, which is often wanting. I often listen to the podcast Skeptico with Alex Sakaris. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that right, whatever his name is. Though I do not share his conclusions, I consider him to be one well-versed in the subject and a capable debater. I see he has recently published a book provocatively titled Why Science is Wrong About Almost Everything.
Wow.
Wow, that's a fucking bold claim.
That's a lot of things to be wrong about.
That's really a lot of things to be wrong about. I'm glad they were wrong about how my cell phone works.
Right? Earth rotating or moving around the sun, like
super physics, glad they were wrong
chemistry,
about
biology,
fucking all the fucking pills I take and things,
right?
That, you know, ibuprofen, man. And
super wrong anyway, about like stem cell research. That's not
in any case. He says, I think an episode where you interview or debate him on questions of parapsychology, pseudoscience would be fascinating. Paul, that's not our show. We're not a debate show. It's not something Tom and I really have a lot of interest in. This is more of a preaching to the choir show. So it's not something that we'd really do. I think we do a lot of justice to. I think we just bit, you know, we have been in a couple debates in our podcasting career, and both times I think that we've just walked away from it a little more aggravated than necessary. And we do this for fun. We do this because we want to have fun and talk and joke around. And that doesn't sound like a jokey show. That sounds like I would be mad the whole time.
You know, the closest I ever came on one of these shows to was edited out. When we were on it, we were guests on a show. And
We were guests on a show.
And I got into it with somebody and had a vigorous and slightly aggressive back and forth. And it was just edited out. Like, it just ends up
just
not being funny.
It was just completely gone. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It wasn't funny, and it was just mean. It turned out it was just mean. We got a message from Minnesota Gooch, and a couple of things. The first says, So I got on the bus number 3 in Minneapolis. At one of the stops, a woman stepped onto the bus and instantly thought to myself, oh, I didn't know there was a Star Wars convention
That's
in town.
Awesome.
How did I miss that? God, I'm such a terrible nerd. How could I have missed that? And he berated himself and he said, oh, wait, that's a Muslim woman in a super fancy full burqa with some rhinestones on the sleeves, not someone cosplaying a binged out Imperial guard.
That's great.
Oh, that's great. He also says at the bottom that he got off at the wrong exit when he was traveling to Detroit.
Oh.
He was traveling from Minneapolis to Detroit through Chicago. So he wanted to hit the most economically bereft areas of the Midwest,
I guess.
Oh, my
God. That's,
yeah.
Decided
to travel through. And he says that when he got off, he says he got off the expressway because there was just like a big fucking crazy jam up. And he got off in pretty bad part of Chicago, and he said within 30 seconds of taking the exit, an undercover cop in a beat up gray cruiser pulled up next to me, popped his siren and waved. I rolled down my passenger window and he said, hey there, this is a really bad neighborhood. You look like you have a very nice family there. You should leave the area. And he said, and the guy says, I was unaware you lived in such a rough place. I am so sorry. If I had known earlier, I would have stopped by your houses to collect you and your families and take you to Detroit with me. I get your joke, but really, there are some really fucking dangerous parts of Chicago. Some places in Chicago where you just do not want to be. And it's because the city is deeply segregated. I live in a very nice neighborhood. I live in a wonderful neighborhood that has a very low murder rate. But if you go, I would say maybe 4 miles from where I live, there are some really horrible fucking places that, you know, they call it Chirac. I mean, people die here constantly through gang violence, and it's just a horror. I mean, and it's a horrible, horrible place in some places, Chicago. I won't try to defend
that. I don't know that Detroit, though, is going to be the solution.
Yeah, I think that's the joke. I think that's the joke.
When Detroit,
though,
I know, it's just awesome. Like when Detroit is the solution to any problem.
Yeah.
You've got a fucked up problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Look me up when that happens.
Right.
People from Syria would rather stay in Syria than come to Detroit. So we got a message, and this is from David, and he just sent us a picture. Basically, went to a hotel this holiday, and he got Tom on his pillow.
Disgusting.
Giardelli eggnog squares. Oh, I'm going to throw up in my mouth here.
Oh, can you imagine? The horror, Cecil.
No.
Hold on a minute,
no.
Because I'm not sure you fully appreciate just how awful the idea of melt-in-your-mouth eggnog would be.
Here's the thing. Eggnog's already a semi-solid. Why make it a full solid?
God, you'd have to chew it. You couldn't just chug it down and fucking, think of the queen. You gotta, chew this. Oh, my God. The idea of getting little bits of fucking eggnog shit stuck in your teeth to slowly dissolve.
Right.
I think I'd rather just have my fucking body broken on the rack.
We got a message from, this is from Craig, who's again listening to us in the past, and he sent us a message about how we were wrong about pronouncing Baphomet, and I'm not going to pronounce it the way you want me to pronounce it. I'm pronouncing it this fucking way. Too fucking bad. And he talks about Final Fantasy VIII, and I remember, it's funny because in Final Fantasy VIII, he sends a picture, and I never played 8, but in Final Fantasy 8, it looks like a fucking, Anubis or some crazy, Egyptian god. It's, got the head of a fucking
goat.
Ram
yeah.
And, like a body of a man, but I thought it was a dragon in Final Fantasy 7.
I don't remember.
I thought it was a dragon. It's
no
weird
idea.
That they decided, like midstream, they're just we're gonna change lore.
Yeah.
okay. Tom, we got a message from Aaron about I guess just a way to handle being an atheist.
Yeah, so Aaron said that his situation is everybody knows that he's an atheist, and one of those people that knows is his grandmother. And she recently told him that she wants to sit down and talk with him because God has told her to tell him something, and he needs to hear it, and he doesn't really know why. And he's kind of uncomfortable about having to go through this sit-down with Grandma. And he kind of wants our advice on how to handle this sit down because he doesn't want to have conflict. And, he kind of recognizes that this is a situation that's rife for the possibility for conflict. But one of the key points that I think he hits on in this email is that if you are religious, really genuinely religious, and you believe, you have an obligation to tell everyone about the gospel, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
And I am sympathetic to that. If I really, truly did think that, my gosh, people will be tortured for all time. How can I stop this? It would be like seeing a child dangling from a window of a house fire and right. walking away without trying to help, you know? So I am really sympathetic to that impulse. And I think if the impulse comes from a place that is genuinely a good place where people care about you, that you can have a respectful conversation, you can hear somebody out, you can listen. And I think you can just, you know, it's like anything, you disagree with somebody that you still respect about. You don't argue point by point. You hear them out. You listen. You take it all in. You try to be genuine about it. And then at the end, if you're not convinced, you know, you say, well, I really appreciate your time. I can tell from this conversation that you're really having this conversation with me because you love me and you care about me and you want only the best things for me. And I just want to say thank you for loving me enough to have this conversation. And I think that's where you end it. You're not changing grandma's mind. You're not going to turn grandma into an atheist. And that's fine. It's got, you know, we're not evangelists. That's the advantage we have, right? We don't have to evangelize. We're not called because there is no hell. And so if people die and they were Christian, they don't go to atheist hell. It doesn't matter.
You know, another thing, you may want to try. I mean, it depends on how old grandma is. Maybe you can wait this out.
That's another option. Yeah. Right. Just stall it.
Yeah, just stall it.
Stall it.
No, I think that, you know, if you love your grandma, you're just going to have to, you know, bite the bullet, go in, have the conversation. You know, I've been in these conversations. My dad tried to do this to me a couple times. You know, tried to have this sort of conversation with me, tried to convince me that I used to believe, so now I should believe again, which is a really bad argument, it turns out. He genuinely wanted me to, he'd be like, remember when you used to believe? And I'd be like, yep. And he'd say, well, why don't you do that anymore? Because he was really upset. He was near the end of his life, and he was upset that he was, you know, there was a possibility in his mind that he'd never see me again. And that really hurt him. Yeah. And I understood it. I understood where he was coming from. And I thought, you know, I feel for you, but I don't think I'm going to see you again when you die. And I don't think you're going to see me either. I wish I could have given him that bit of comfort when he died, but I couldn't because I can't lie to him. I wouldn't be able to lie to him about it. And I don't think you should lie either. I think you should be honest, but I also think you should be respectful. And it's going to be a difficult conversation, but it's one you probably have to have if you love your grandma. If you don't love her, then just avoid her.
If you don't love her, just fuck with her. It's terrible.
So we got a list of predictions. This is from Ivan. And he says, I like how he spells his name too. Very pronounceable.
Right.
He says, this is what he predicts in 2015. I'm just going to read a couple of these. He says, my utility bills will continue to be due each and every month. I like each and every month. And then he says, 2, my dogs will remain dead for the next 365 days.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's awesome. There's some funny stuff there. Thank you very much, Ivan, for your 2015 predictions.
I believe these predictions, Ivan. I do. I think you hit the nail on the head with these. Your powers are astounding.
So we're producing this episode a little early. We look forward to coming back next week with another full episode. But we're going to leave you, as always do, with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain dead pan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your signs. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and views expressed in this show are that of the hosts only. Our poorly formed and expressed notions do not represent those of our wives, employers, friends, families, or of the local dairy council.